I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio. Nice to have you listening for another week, obviously, here on a Saturday morning. And we just finished up with Bob and Mark talking about their experiences in Kolob Canyon in Zion National Park. And we've learned of some new details of the story of the California woman that was missing for 12 days inside Zion National Park. So, Bob, I ask you to stay over with me for a few more minutes here, just because you're so familiar with the park. And we'll share the information. I've also asked Mary Richards, who did some reporting on this story for us this week, because we're hearing some new details from the family. But she was dropped off in the Grotto area. I guess that's a regular spot for the bus or the transportation to drop everybody off, isn't it?
Yeah, the Grotto is the shuttle stop where you would take the trail to Angel's Landing.
Yeah.
It's the trailhead for the Kayenta Trail that goes up to the Emerald Pools, and then also on the West Rim Trail that with access to Angel's Landing and then beyond.
And one of the fears, and we didn't talk about this on the show because we didn't want to speculate and put any more angst on the family, obviously. One of the fears was that since that is the drop-off spot for something like Angel's Landing, that maybe she had lost some footing and had fallen, but that we obviously know that's not the case now.
Yeah, I mean, that was what we had suspected when it had gone so long without finding her and knowing that she was dropped off at the Grotto. That was the first thing that came to mind, that she was going up to Angel's Landing. And that was what we suspected. But fortunately, that wasn't the case.
Yeah. A very experienced hiker, according to her family. Her daughter was saying before she was found that she had lost her job a couple of weeks prior and was in a makeshift van that was traveling around the country and just looking to clear her mind a little bit. I'm going to bring Mary Richards into the conversation here, Mary, because we also are now learning a little bit more from the family, just because there's been so many questions around how she survived and where she was for those 12 days. What are they now saying?
Well, they are now saying that, first off, that she's checked herself into a mental wellness center to kind of get some help for her mental health. Apparently, she'd been kind of suffering from some issues, and her family says they think she kind of had a mental breakdown, was not in the right state of mind when she took this journey. She went in without a phone or food or water to kind of maybe do like one of those deconnecting, detox kind of fasting kind of spiritual journeys, it says. And she'd been to Zion National Park before, in fact, several times. So, but anyway, the family now is saying they think it's a miracle she survived, is how they put it. They talked to the Today Show, because how could she have survived 12 days without proper gear or food or water, was their point.
Yeah.
They also provided pictures. And this is where I would just like to ask them a couple more questions, because it says courtesy Holly Cordier, and which was this woman's name, and she did not have a phone with her. But anyway, it shows this little clearing she was at by the water source, the riverbed. And then it shows where she marked with a Sharpie on a tree branch the days, because she was disoriented. But here's the thing about the river. So they'd said a few days ago she was by a water source. And then we were hearing from a sheriff's deputy in southern Utah who, with Washington County, who is super familiar with that area, has done search and rescues, who was saying, that doesn't quite add up. There's a lot of bacteria in that water source. So then the family clarified, saying, well, we never said she drank it. She kind of wet her lips. Anyway, they're just trying to provide some details that they know, where I think the family might have a lot of questions still,
too. Well, look, I told you both before we got on to talk about this, I don't want to pile on, particularly in a situation where we know that there may be some mental issues here. However, on this program, and Bob knows this well, that when we have these kinds of stories, we always try to do two things. We want to, first of all, learn where mistakes were made, because that helps us all before we go out into the wild. And secondly, if she survived for 12 days out there, we want to know what she did right to be able to do that. But this sergeant you're talking about is with the Washington County Search and Rescue and was a part of this search team. And she says she was, or he said she was found about a half a mile from where she was dropped off, Bob, and that the only source of water, and maybe you can speak to this, in that area would be the Virgin River, and that there's all kinds of bacteria in there, and it's not the kind of water you'd want to be drinking. Among the things that's been in that water, as late as July, it was diagnosed with the algal bloom that we're talking so much about these days, and that had she actually been drinking that water during those 12 days, she would have been maybe not survived, secondly, been very, very sick and would not have been able to walk out of there.
Yeah, that's true. That's got the cyanobacteria in it right now. And I've been up the Narrows several times this summer, and it's pretty heavy up in that section. So, I don't think that drinking the water would have been a good thing to do. I wouldn't have had a good result to it, especially in its current condition. But even without it, river water isn't generally a good thing to drink. There are some natural springs in the park, but not. I'm trying to think, within a half mile of the grotto, I don't know in which direction, but it is really thick down by the river. There aren't any heavily trafficked trails that follow the river down there, and there's a really heavy brush and deadfall, and the understory is pretty thick.
This picture shows that is very, very thick, lots of underbrush and vegetation.
Yeah, and they made the point, the sergeant did, that if you go off trail there, there's such a vast area that you may not be found. It would be very difficult to find you, but that his team went above and beyond. They had canine dogs out there and everything else. But here's the point. If you just wetting your lips is not going to help you survive. And so for 12 days, certainly, but you can't go 2 or 3 days without water. So the question is, where is that water source? She probably couldn't carry enough water in there to keep herself alive for 12 days.
Yeah, and that's where I think it would be nice to get some more answers when she's ready. And maybe she'll bring her family there. Her sister told the Today Show that Holly lost around 15 to 18 pounds. Yeah. She looked emaciated.
And she was on a fast is what we were
exactly. Talking. Yeah, she'd gone in already fasting. She'd been kind of having a tough year, as many have had, with her job and things like that. And so they felt like she used it a couple times, the words a miracle. On their GoFundMe page where they'd been fundraising, they said, they kind of defended their fundraising, saying we need to pay for medical care for her and reimburse all the search costs that we incurred as we were looking for her. They didn't say anything about the official search.
Yeah, and they aren't saying about charging the family for any of this.
No,
I haven't heard.
Yeah. It sounds like that's something where, our search and rescue crews. In fact, there's another report we had this week about how busy they've been. It's their volunteers just are incredible with how they just go. They just go and look, and that's what they do.
Well, because so many people are looking to get outdoors. We've talked about this on a regular basis on this show through the pandemic, Bob, that many people are looking at this as one of the only things they can do safely, and so people that don't have a ton of experience are actually maybe putting themselves at risk when they go out to these areas, just wanting to get away and recharge their batteries.
Yeah, our search and rescue have been slammed this year. They've hardly had a break. What we're seeing is a lot of first-time visitors, not just at Zion, but first-timers in national parks. And they're very unfamiliar with the terrain, with the conditions. We're very dry here, hot. They get themselves in trouble. They get dehydrated, disoriented. So there's been a lot of rescues this year.
But again, the family's saying that's not the case with her, that she was familiar not only with hiking, experienced in that regard, but also knew the park. Here's one more thing, and then we've got to run. She did an interview on CNN, and the original story was that she had hit her head on a tree, became disoriented, and was only able to take a few steps before collapsing. But the same sergeant says, if we had found somebody in that condition with that kind of severe head injury, we would have, at a minimum, called for a transport agency to get her out. The fact that she didn't, or that didn't happen, tells me that they did not find any significant injury to her that would have prompted them to do that. There's just a ton of questions here. And, Mary, if you would do us one favor, if there are any more developments in this, I'd love to have you back on just so we can, again, learn from what happened there. What did she do wrong? What have she done right if she survived for 12 days out there? Because, you know, luckily for the family and for her, she is alive and well, obviously having some mental issues, but getting help on that as well.
Definitely. They call it a miracle, and it may have well been. But like you said, I love to hear those details because I love to hike, too, and I want to be safe as I do so.
Yeah. Mary, thanks. You do such great work. It's nice to have you on the show. I don't think we've done this before.
It's been fun for me. I love it. I love your show.
And Bob, thanks for hanging on a few extra minutes with us here on KSL.
You bet. My pleasure.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back and finish out the program next. Don't go away.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final couple of minutes of the show for another week. Navi's dropped off. Mark Wade is gone. My only friend in the world is actually Bob Grove, who's still with us today to wrap up the program. And I'm sorry we missed connecting with Russ Smith, but he did tell me that he was going to be fully loaded with the trailer in tow, headed out to the West Desert, and was not crazy about trying to have a conversation while he was driving. So we'll look forward to a full report on the Pony Express 100 coming up on next week's program. So something to look forward to. Speaking of looking forward to something, we've mentioned a couple of times on the show this morning, Bob, that it appears many people, and we've seen this sort of grow over time, but more and more people are jonesing to get out and do some things, probably going to squeeze it in here before the snow actually begins to fly, and some people may be less likely to go out and enjoy. But we've seen some increase in tourism activity, which we actually talked about on Utah's Morning News this week. Have you heard that or seen that with your clients?
Oh, boy, I've seen it firsthand. You know, this whole season has been very strange.
Yeah.
You know, for obvious reasons. It started out just dropping off the table. I mean, the tourism industry was just gutted in the early part. And then we started seeing some increases as we got further into the summer. And now this fall has been busier than I can ever remember. I have Mark and I were mentioning that to each other the other day as we were coming back from Torrey, how busy the roads were, how busy the towns were, how busy Bryce was. I mean, the line coming out of the park, and we have not seen this kind of business. And it's a different visitor. It's not the visitor that we typically see this time of year. What we normally see around this time of year are a lot of buses. There are a lot of tour groups that are international. They're still coming through the month of October into early November. Family travel high on weekends, you know, and still kind of that domestic inbound market from back east. What we're seeing now this year are the visitor is different. It's more of an outdoor sportsman, a recreational. They're out there for recreation. They're out there hiking. They're going to the parks, but they're spending more time on the trails. And they're not as much of that sightseeing tourists that are jumping from park to park to park. They're more.
They're looking to get away.
They're looking to get away. But, you know, the reason why is, I mean, you can't go on a cruise, can't go to Hawaii,
right.
Can't go many of Disneyland. Many of their popular destinations that they typically go to are just not available right now. And it's not just Utah. It's all of our surrounding states. You know, the people that were on my tour recently were from Florida, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they all had plans for other trips. They were going to go to Europe and South America and on a cruise and all these other trips. But the national parks became the best option.
Well, and I think, and this may have been part of our reporting this week on KSL, that Zion actually reported record numbers in September.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised because it has been very, very busy. You know, on these last tours I took, busiest I've seen in 27 years of guiding, busiest fall I've seen. I talked to a ranger in Arches National Park. He said since Labor Day, the park, and this was at the time that I spoke to him a week or so ago, that the park had been closed 16 times since Labor Day, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
And so, but this isn't the new normal. This is my prediction. This is just me speaking as a consultant in the industry. is I don't believe this is the new normal. This isn't going to stay this way, because as things open up, as Disneyland opens, as Hawaii opens, as cruises, all the other things, as they return, we'll see a falling off of many of these visitors that are now, you know, all converging here at our national parks. And it's not just here in Southern Utah, it's throughout the national park system, Yellowstone and all the others.
I have adopted this saying of, you know, it's not a new normal, because we don't want this to be normal. It is what we refer to as a new now. And so we'll deal with the new now. And I was, you know, it's affected everything, including sports, obviously, which I'm involved with on a couple of different levels. But I was reading about the World Series that's coming up, and the fact that they're going to allow, I don't know what it is, 15,000 or 17,000 people into a 50,000 seat stadium. And that there was a story I read yesterday of somebody who planned on this a while ago, but lives in Hawaii, and just figured, look, there is never going to be an opportunity in my lifetime like this for me to see a World Series baseball game. So they started breaking it down, and a ticket from, you know, the islands to get to wherever the World Series is taking place would have normally been about $1,000, and it was $300. A hotel room in the city that was hosting the World Series would be almost impossible to get, and if you could get it, it would be $500 a night, and instead it was $100 a night. Even things like food along the way, and the ticket itself to the World Series was $45 instead of $450.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, those kinds, it's an example, but those kinds of opportunities are out there, whether you want to go see a World Series game or whether you want to go, you know, to see one of our great national parks. And people are making these decisions on very short notice, I think, which is probably tough for these resorts to deal with.
It, that's another thing that Mark and I have observed, is that the lead time is very tight. Now, people are making their decisions as they get close to the travel date, because then, you know, they're kind of waiting and seeing to see what happens. And, I have a feeling that this is going to continue for a while, you know, until things start lifting. But, you know, the resorts and others that are in the industry are making adjustments. But I would recommend, if you're out wanting to travel on a road trip in the fall, you know, the parks are very busy. In fact, I would recommend, if you're going to Moab right now, there is construction on the main road going through town on 191, just beyond the bridge going into town. And it is not fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Had to deal with that. So keep that in consideration when you're going down there. And there's some other things. I know the tourism office in Moab won't be happy to hear me say that, but they're already full anyway, so I don't think it makes any difference. But you know, just there's so many other choices. You know, there's places like Cedar City and Beaver, and some look for cities that aren't gateway communities to the parks, because those are the communities that are going to be the busiest. Or just check with them first, because the word on the street right now is that it's pretty busy for at least the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. All right. All good advice, and that's why I love having you on. That's going to do it. We're out of time. We're going to turn it over to Maria Chaleos and Tom Bettis. That means the greenhouse is coming your way next. Bob, have a great week.
Thanks, Tim. You too.
Getting together to just chat makes it feel a little like the new normal instead of the new now. I appreciate hearing from you. It lifts my spirits. We'll head on out of here. I'll be back with you Monday morning, of course, for Utah's Morning News with Amanda Dixon starting at 5 o'clock. Hope you have a great weekend, and thanks again for listening to KSL Outdoors Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.